I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it's 9:01 a.m. on March 14th, 2023. Present today, we have Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Staff, Representative Clolome, Representative Cronk, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Foster, and myself, Representative Johnson. Today, we will be continuing with our Finance Subcommittee closeout reports. And first on the agenda will be the subcommittees chaired by Representative Staff, which are the Department of Family and Community Services, Department of Health, and the University of Alaska. And we have been joined by Representative Edgman. Representative Staff, when you're ready, actually, I'm going to just take a brief at ease and then to get repositioned here. Representative Co-Chair Foster, Co-Chair Edgman, and myself, Co-Chair Johnson. But we got it all equal the first time. So welcome, Representative Staff. Thanks for all your hard work and your subcommittees. I know you've done a tremendous amount of work. You had the biggest budget that we have or before you. Go ahead and put yourself on the record, introduce your staff, and go ahead and start your closeout report on the Department of Family and Community Services.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. To the Chair, to all the members of the committee, thank you. My name, for the record, is Representative Will Staff. I represent East Fairbanks. My committee aide is Bernard Otto. Bernard?
For the record, Bernard Otto, Staff to Representative Staff.
And the first presentation we will be discussing in our subcommittee closeout is the Department of Family and Community Services. So the House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Family and Community Services had a total of four meetings in this particular department. We consisted of division overview presentations, talked about some of the Governor's FY24 line items as well as the amended line items that were submitted. Based on those considerations, the subcommittee opted to make no changes to the Governor's operating budget regarding the department and submits the following recommendations for the FY24 operating budget to the House Finance Committee. So our recommendations are total spend in unrestricted general funds, $246,207,800. DGF designated general funds, $28,910,200. Other funds, $101,406,700. And federal funding, $82,491,800. For a total of $459,016,500. Compared to the FY24 adjusted base, the subcommittee recommends an increase of $1,609,800, or 0.7%, in UGF, $2,630,000 or 10% increase in designated general funds, and an increase of $865,000 in other funds, as well as $88,200 in federal funds, for a total increase of $5,193,000, or 1.1% in all fund sources. So the department has a total of 1,930 positions. 1,854 of those are permanent full-time positions, 14 of those are permanent part-time positions, and 62 of those are temporary positions. So compare that to the FY24 base. The subcommittee recommendations reports an increase of 7 permanent full-time positions and 1 permanent part-time position, or a total of 7.7% increase in personnel within the department. So the subcommittee reviewed and discussed the governor's proposals, transactions in detail. After considerations, all items were adopted unchanged with unanimous consent. So some of the highlights for the budgetary action is we have an increase in Pioneer Home Residence. It's $1,250,000 increment to support increased opportunity for the Alaska Pioneer Home Residence. $800,000 in to establish a competency restoration and jail-based restoration pilot program for API, the Alaska Psychiatric Institute. $324,000 in UGF federal receipts and interagency receipts increment to basically help create a complex placement coordinator to assist in placement option for high needs, complex and hard to place individuals who need services. And of course, we modified conditional language for carry forward of program receipts to refer to the Department of Family and Community Services instead of the now defunct Department of Health and Human Services. So as the members of this committee know, last year the departments were effectively split in two, and we just had to do a little bit of administrative legwork to change some type of definitions and ensuring that proper funding sources went different the correct places. So during the process, we had, I set an amendment deadline for members of the subcommittee and welcome amendment from all members. There were no amendments submitted regarding the Department of Family and Community Services. And, of course, we have attached a bunch of different resorts for the purview of the committee as far as the ones that we adopted. Example, the agency totals from the Department of Family and Community Services are transaction comparative sheets of the adjusted base and to the House subcommittee, and our comparison sheet from the FY24 amend to the House Finance Subcommittee wordage. And that would conclude all I have for the report. Are there any questions?
All right. Well, thank you, Representative Staff. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Representative Stapp, my questions surround the API jail-based restoration program for competency, and I'm curious as to whether the department described, when it's using the term jail-based, so it's not saying directly Department of Corrections, but I assume it's our Department of Corrections, and I'm wondering if they described how this is split between their competency in the jail-based, whether there are costs for the Department of Corrections, and where they're doing that program, because although it's under an API component when they say jail-based, I got a lot of questions about that. So did they describe that, or do you have an understanding of where it's really taking place, or whether there's an impact at the corrections budget?
Through the chair to Representative Hannon. So, yeah, we went over this fairly in-depthly. I'm going to actually hand the technical response after my committee aide, if that's appropriate, Madam Chair.
For the record, Bernard Ows, through the chair to Representative Hannon. The department described the jail-based restoration program as a collaboration with the Department of Corrections. API is designing a jail-based restoration program to support court-ordered evaluations of competency data, because the data and research for successful implementations in other states are being evaluated for the program design. They didn't share many specifics on how it would be rolled out. But it does add, in relation to this program, it adds 5 positions, 4 full-time and 1 part-time position.
Follow up. Just to clarify, those positions are at corrections or at family services?
Through the chair to Representative Hannon for the Department of Family and Community Services.
Guess I'm going to need a little follow-up from them just to understand how this program will work with conjunction of corrections. And it is pretrial, so those would be jails, but our jails are not the best location for competency restoration. Certainly competency evaluations occur there on a regular basis. And so I'm probably going to need some more information from the department, but it does not have to be today. But if they're prepared to answer it, that'd be great.
So I just wanted to let everyone know that my intention is not to bring the department up at any time. We did yesterday, but it was probably better that we don't. But we do have, I'll go back on the record and say that we do have Alexi Painter here who can. On the record. I wanted to just make sure that, did you get everything you needed to get answered, or did you want to add one more piece to that, Representative Hannah?
Madam Chair, I believe for the subcommittee, that's probably all the information they're given, and what I'm probably going to do is grill the Department of Corrections, because I have a closer relationship with them, and they can probably answer the questions I'm asking about from their end, what this looks like, how this adds to their programming and their availability to conduct that.
Okay, very good. Representative Josephson.
For the committee's knowledge, there is a bill, Senate Bill 53, and my bill, House Bill 80, has a hearing today on this topic. And while I appreciate the governor's increments, the committee may want to be aware that there are fiscal notes that suggest there's underspending in this area. So people are on wait lists to try to be restored for half a year, and the court throws up its hands and dismisses cases because they're unconvinced that we'll get there. And the result is people are being hurt or killed. As one more example of this, there's a report from Agnew Beck that we commissioned that says there needs to be 25 more beds. So right now, API has 10 beds for this. They need 25 more. So I think there's some underspending going on here. It's a very complicated issue. And I just wanted to share that with the committee.
All right. Any other questions on the Department of Family and Community Services? Seeing none, we will move next to the Department of Health. Representative Stapp, when you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to the members of the committee, so I'll next be talking about the subcommittee process regarding the Department of Health. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Health had a total of 9 meetings, and I just wanted to thank all of the members who grinded it out with us throughout that process. We learned a lot of wonderful things about the department, and we also discussed in detail a lot of the many challenges that are facing some of the divisions within the department. Effectively, we discussed the governor's amended budget. Those considerations, the subcommittee had made a few changes to the governor's operating budget, which I will discuss momentarily. And we submit the following recommend operating budget for FY24 to the House Finance Committee. In total, our funding sources, unrestricted general funds, $970,364,700. Designated general funds, $54,206,500. Other funds, $98,055,600. Federal funding, $2,018,024,400. For a total budget of $3,140,721,200. So comparing that to the FY24 adjusted base, the subcommittee recommends and represents an increase of $48,319,500, or 5.2% in UGF, $560,100, or 1.1% in DGF, $6,915,000 in other funds, or 7.6%, $1,144,200, or 0.1% in federal funds, for a total increase of $56,947,800, or 1.8% in all fund sources. So the department effectively currently has a total amount of 1,539 employees. 1,459 are permanent full-time employees, 5 are permanent part-time employees, and 75 are temporary employees. So compared to the FY24 adjusted base, the subcommittee recommends an increase of 16 permanent full-time positions, or 1.1%, and one temporary position, or 1.4% within the department. So to highlight some of the actions that the subcommittee reviewed and discussed, we mainly focused around some of the immediate challenges of the department. Many of the folks in the finance committee are, of course, aware with the challenges within the Department of Public Assistance regarding SNAP and, of course, Medicaid redeterminations. And we looked at what ways we could better resource and facilitate, efficient response to those types of challenges. So the subcommittee reviewed and discussed the governor's proposed transactions in detail. Most of the items were adopted unchanged with unanimous consent. However, there were changes made by the committee with unanimous consent as well. So the following items unchanged from the governor's proposals are $416,400 restorative justice account increment to increase the statutory distribution of funding. $774,000 federal seats or general fund matching increment to increase recoveries and rebates with additional positions in the Division of Healthcare Services. That is, of course, in reference to travel reclaiming, pharmacy benefit managers, and other ways we can put some cost containment methods around the Medicaid program, especially when it looks at our federal receipts. And of course, $98,200 general fund increment for the Division of Senior and Disability Services and the community-based grants and for centers of independent living. And, of course, the following items are what we changed from the subcommittee. $2.6 million in general funds were decremented to the existing to extend postpartum coverage due to the introduction of HB 59 and its progression throughout the legislative process. That is, of course, referencing the bill that was submitted by the governor's office regarding the extension of postpartum coverage. So in order for that to be funded, that funding source is, of course, tied to the passage of the legislation. So that is the purpose behind that decrement. And the adjustment of allocation sources for the behavioral mental health crisis now continuum care grants to correct an administrative error that was made in FY23, and I can certainly have my committee aide speak in more detail to the purpose of that. So as far as the amendment procedure in amendments, so I, the chair myself, set an amendment deadline and welcomed amendments from all members. There were 9 amendments received. The committee adopted 2 amendments and rejected 7 amendments. Adopted amendments are as follows. $3,295,000 general fund decrement to epidemiology allocation in the base budget and substituted that with a $3.295,000 general fund temporary increment or INT. Effectively, what we did is we had funding that was allocated going to the base budget and we made that a one-time increment instead. The same is true with the $705,000 decrement that was made to epidemiology allocation in the following line item in the base budget, and we replaced that with a $705,000 increment to the general fund in terms of temporary increments or a one-time increase. So in your packets, we have attached reports for the subcommittee of the Department of Health as adopted and attached. Those are going to be the Department of Health agency totals. Our transaction comparison sheet from the adjusted base to the House subcommittee, and of course our FY24 governor's amend to the House subcommittee as well as the proper wordage. And that concludes my report from the Department of Health. I'd be happy to take any questions the members might have.
Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Representative Staff, I have 3 areas of questions, so I'll throw them out and see what you can. I am curious as to the Division of Senior and Disability Services grants, the 1498.2, how that impacts their wait list. Does that catch them up with the demand for services? I'm looking for a little more information on the Crisis Now Continuum of Care grants. You referred to it as an error. We funded some programs last year. None of those programs are fully online, and so to me it just looks like there's less money for it this year as they're standing up services. And then the third, on the 2 epidemiology amendments that became temporary in the BA sheet, it refers to both of them and working on congenital syphilis, and I am curious whether epidemiology believes they can resolve them in one fiscal year. Those are my questions.
Very good. Representative Stapp.
Through the chair to Representative Hannon, I will take these questions in detail. Appreciate it. So regarding the senior and disability grants, I think I caught most of that. You're referencing to how well that will help. Are you referencing IDD waitlist in that question?
Yeah.
Okay. So my committee, Bernard.
For the record, Bernard Otto, through the chair to Representative Hannon. So the $1.4 million in funding is regarding services that are already provided to senior and disability community. It doesn't address the IDD wait list. And so that's for that question.
So the second question was in reference to the administrative processes. So,
through the chair to Representative Hannon, the short answer to that question is that the specific allocation source was the wrong allocation source. Originally, the funding was given to the Behavioral Health Prevention and Early Intervention Grants when it should have been given to the Behavioral Health Treatment and Recovery Grants. And so those changes were discussed with the department as well as the Legislative Finance Division. So it doesn't take out any funding as proposed by the governor. It simply just makes sure they're allocated to the appropriate allocation.
Oh, and the final one is the epidemiology question. That's right.
And through the chair to Representative Hannon for the epidemiology, when the department responded to the amendments, the only change is that they would have to come every year to request more or less funds depending on how the progression of their the syphilis program was going. The amendment specifically changes it to a one-time increment from fiscal year 24 all the way to fiscal year 30 to align with the governor's Healthy Alaskans 2030 initiative.
Follow up?
Is that on the same?
Yeah, that was just,
yeah, go ahead.
So it's not a 1 year, the epidemiology funding through the chair is a 5 year allocation?
Through the chair to Representative Hannon, it's a 1 year, it's a temporary increment with the understanding that the department will be coming back next year up until fiscal year 2030, depending on how effective the program is against the, against syphilis crisis.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Galvin.
I withdraw. It was a question around the epidemiology. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Josephson.
Just to clarify on this. My sense of this amendment from Representative Sadler was the governor says the Healthy Alaskans Initiative will have some impact. There's going to be a presumption. It's going to be reviewed year to year that the money will be there. But the governor says this will work, and so we shouldn't need as much money in 7 years, effectively. That was my sense of it.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Jefferson. Yeah, I would assess the same thing. Effectively, what we're trying to do is measure the results from the initiative, and the best way to do that is to hear the great progress that the folks at the Department of Health make year to year regarding this issue.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I guess this isn't so much as a question as a comment that we've heard from department after department about how difficult it is to especially hire experts in particular areas. And it concerns me that we think we can hire an epidemiologist year after year. And I think that we heard from the commissioner that might be a concern. And so I do know that when we're thinking about having folks in the room who know what they're talking about when it comes to especially anything related to healthcare like syphilis, HIV right now is happening. There are many of these concerns. And so I appreciate that there was some thought that they may be coming back year after year, but I also wonder if there was much discussion around how difficult it may be to ensure that we keep these experts in the state.
So through the chair to, for the record, Bernard Odo, through the chair, to Representative Galvin, in talks with the department, we were informed that this epidemiology budget line was to fund long-term non-perm positions, so there were no additional PCNs requested with this funding, and the long-term non-perm positions are typically year-to-year. So.
Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, quick questions. While we're on the record, you know, this is obviously the biggest number we're probably going to see. So can you just quickly explain where a majority of those federal funds are paid from?
Yeah, through the Chair to Representative Cronk, you're talking about where they originate from or program yet? That's effectively going to be in the state's the FMAP, the federal matching percentage for the state's Medicaid program. So just to highlight some of the biggest challenges within the Department of Health right now. Obviously, everyone's aware with the SNAP issues with the backlog. But the main increase in the spend in the terms of UGF this year is coming almost solely from the state's Medicaid program. The reason behind that is effectively the end of the COVID emergency funding through the state had been receiving what's called enhanced FMAP, as well as the end of the COVID emergency happened, utilization in healthcare services goes up. A lot of folks put doing medical stuff off during the pandemic. They're going to start doing those procedures now. So that, of course, is the driving cost factor behind the state's increase in state GF cost for the Medicaid match through UGF funds.
Thank you.
And that concludes my...
Just one moment. Back on the record.
For the record, Bernard Aldo, and to the Chair, we would like to invite from Legislative Finance, Alexi Painter, to describe a little bit more about the INCT, just to clarify that.
Very good. Welcome to House Finance, Mr. Painter.
Thank you. Chair Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. So to clarify, an INCT or a temporary increment means that item will remain in the base budget, meaning it'll be in the adjusted base each year for the length of time specified. So in the title, it says FY24 through 30. So each year through FY30, it will be in the adjusted base. And FY31, it'll be removed from the adjusted base. So it ensures that the funding is in the base through the life of that, but then gets removed automatically at that point. It would have to be a policy choice by the legislature to add it back when that time frame is over.
Very good. I think that not sure exactly which that was for Representative Hannon or Galvin or maybe both on
that. The answer to my question.
Yes. Okay. So as long as that question's answered. All right. Well, thank you very much. And I believe that brings us to the end of the Department of Health. Do you have? I have a question. It should be a little simpler question. We separated the department last year, and there was a lot of discussion about when we did the bifurcation of HESS. previously, Hess. I guess as you went through the budget, did you, the one of the goals was transparency, to be able to really see what was happening since the department had gotten so large. Did you, do you feel like that goal was accomplished?
Yeah, through the chair to the chair, right? So I would say that, yeah, it was certainly more effective when breaking down some of the line items, especially some of the issues that the both departments work on are dynamically different, right? I would say that as far as some of the accounting things, there's a huge amount of interagency receipts transfers still between the two departments. So some of that is difficult, but I think probably by this time next year, most of that will get sorted out. But they are still heavily connected on each other, mainly due to the nature of the Medicaid program, if that makes sense, because of interagency receipt authority. So.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. All right, well, very good. Is there anything else that you would like to add in closing?
That concludes my report. Thank you.
Yes, through the chair. Crisis Now, along with changing the funding source, it appears there was a $200,000 reduction. Is that right, Mr. Through the chair, Mr. Aoto?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, I'm going to go ahead and call a lifeline and ask for our Ledge Finance Division to kind of explain a little bit more about this agreement, because it was a little complex from fiscal year 23.
Okay.
That's all right. So Valerie Rose from Legislative Finance Division.
All right, welcome to House Finance.
Good morning. For the record, Valerie Rose, Legislative Finance Division. Could you repeat the question, please?
Through the chair, Ms. Rose, along with changing the funding source, which to me was sort of a bookkeeping matter, in items 54 and 55, do the BA sheets reflect a reduction in Crisis Now funding?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the Crisis Now Continuum of Care grants actually did not have a fund source change,
okay,
but they did have a change in, as Bernard was saying, a change in one of the allocations where they were located. Initially in FY23, as he explained, there was an issue with where it was placed in the governor's budget. It had been incorrectly placed in an allocation within behavioral health. It was moved, and then it was accidentally backed out in the wrong allocation in the FY24 submission. So in discussions with the department, we reallocated a portion of the funding to the correct allocation and then left the other portion in the allocation where they had initially put it. In FY24, they actually split the funding, whereas in FY23, all of the funding was in one allocation. So the actual... even though there looks like there is a small decrement to the allocation, that was due to removing the $900,000 that was accidentally added to the base in that allocation in FY23. So we backed that out in FY24 because it was supposed to be a temporary increment. And then the subcommittee through the process added back in the $667,000 that was intended to be in that allocation in FY24. There's another $333,000 in a different allocation.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. Now, do you have any additional comments, Representative Staff?
No, I would say through the chair to the chair and the committee, thank you for your time. That concludes my report for the Department of Health.
All right, very good. We have one more staff subcommittee. Then we will be... move to the University of Alaska. Representative Staff, when you're ready, please begin your closeout report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, to the members of the committee, well, first I want to introduce my other committee aide for the University Budget Subcommittee, Clifton Coghill. He will be assisting me as we present the University of Alaska Budget Subcommittee report. Clifton, can you state your name?
For the record, Clifton Coghill, staff for Representative Staff.
And again, thank you through the chair to the members of the committee. So university budget, FY24 operating budget. So the House Budget Subcommittee for the University of Alaska had a total of three meetings. We made no changes to the governor's requests and submits the following for recommendations for operating budget for FY24 to the House Finance Committee. So for starters, UGF, unrestricted general funds, $308,411,000. Designated general funds, $306,261,900. Other funding, $75,510,500. And federal funds, $188,325,900 for a total amount of $878,509,300. So comparing that to the FY24 adjusted base, the subcommittee recommends an increase of 98,000, or not even quite a full percent in UGF, and a decrease of 5,633,300, or 1.8% in DGF. There was no adjustment in federal funds, and an increase of 445,000, or 0.6% of other funds, for a total decrease of 0.6% in all funds. So the university system currently has a total of 3,944 employees. 3,959 of them are permanent full-time. 185 are permanent part-time, and there are zero temporary employees at the U.S. system. So after reviewing and discussing the governor's proposed transactions in detail, the subcommittee adopted all items by unanimous consent. Some of the highlights in the FY24 budget are as follows. Basically, expanding health education centers at the UAA campus. The Alaska Health Education Centers, or AHEC, will implement multiple community-based behavioral health day camps that can concentrate on behavioral health, career exploration. These will operate around the state in northwest, southeast, Yukon, Kuskokwim, and other areas. So the WAMI program, obviously WAMI program has been a very important thing to the heart and soul of many folks within this committee and the history of the state. So we allocated funds to ensure that to grow the WAMI program so that the University of Alaska can make high quality, accessible, and affordable post-secondary education to folks seeking that across the state. And finally, changes in technical and vocational ed programs. Appropriation to the language. The Alaska Technical and Vocation Education Program, or TVEP, provides non-competitive grants to institutions that are part of the statewide vocational training system to help further the state's workforce development challenges. So I myself, the chair, set an amendment deadline. We received three amendments from members, and all amendments failed to pass. So attached is the report offered at this budget subcommittee. It's in the packet. It goes over UA agency totals. The transaction comparison between the adjusted base and, of course, the House Budget Subcommittee. So that concludes my report regarding the UA system budget. Does anyone have any questions?
Representative Galvin.
Thank you so much, through the chair, Johnson, representative staff. I really appreciate all your work on this. I just wanted to, I guess this is more of a comment than anything else. Want to make sure that we're all aware that this is still a work in progress. I appreciate that. And then since 2019, we've reduced overall spend by 19% at the University of Alaska at large. Every other department who's come through here, we've worked on with their inflationary costs and labor costs adjustments. Or brand new computers every 3 years for several different agencies, departments. Meanwhile, our university system is cutting programs at a time when workforce development has never been more important. So I look forward to more work ahead. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and through the chair to Representative Gowan, so I would like to point out for the record that comparative to the last year's budget for the university is actually getting a $16,854,100 increase in FY24 as compared to FY23.
All right, thank you. And is there Representative Ortiz?
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the chair. In Representative Staff, in relationship to your last comment there, in your summary, it says other funds for a total decrease of 0.6 in all funds. So how is it that we had a decrease in all funds and yet we had an increase in funds? How did that work?
Through the chair to Representative Ortiz, that's referencing the FY24 governor's amended budget to the subcommittee recommendations. So I just pointed out FY23's budget to FY24's budget. So that's a discrepancy.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right. Do we have any closing? Now, do we have any closing comments? Any closing comments? Thank you very much, Representative Stapp. Seeing no additional questions. I know that was a. We had a lot of subcommittees. Your work on them was very much appreciated.
Well, I just wanted to say on the record, I just want to thank everybody at the Finance Committee for the university process, as well as all the wonderful people who assisted us along the way, from our legislative financial division to all the members of the departments that we worked on. And I especially want to convey on the record that all of the members on here on House Finance and my understanding, and I'll speak for you, we are very well aware of the challenges, and especially the Department of DPA, and I would like to venture to say that we are working very hard to ensure that we can resolve some of those issues as quickly and efficiently as possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next closeout report is, first of all, welcome to House Finance Department of Community, Representative Edgman, Department of Community and Commerce, Community and Economic Development. And Representative Edgman, Co-Chair Edgman, whenever you're ready, go ahead and begin our closeout report.
Good morning, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. With me, and for the record, Bryce Sidman, I represent House District 37. With me is my staffer, Labe Allensworth. And just to preface things before I turn it over to him to walk the committee through the committee report, subcommittee report, the Department of Commerce is a committee that historically has had a smaller amount of general funds. In the last 10 years or so, it's really seen a lot of decreases in general fund usage. Down to about 13% in terms of the subcommittee's proposal. The UGF amount that the subcommittee is putting forward on behalf largely of the administration's recommendation essentially doubles from about $10 million to $20 million in UGF, and that's tied to three large sources. One is $5 million of one-time increment to the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. Another is a fund source switch for the Alaska Gasoline Development Corporation. And then the third is a fund source as well through the corporation's boards and professional licenses division. And with that, Madam Co-Chair, I'll turn things over to my staff to walk through the committee reports and respond to any questions afterwards.
Very good.
For the record, Leigh Ballinsworth, staff to Representative Benjamin. The House Finance Subcommittee for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development made no changes from the governor's request, and so I'll walk through the fund sources here and explain some of those large changes. For unrestricted general funds, it's a $19,641,900 increment, or sorry, fund. This represents a $582,000 increase from the FY24 adjusted base, largely due to those fund source switches and the one-time increment that the representative mentioned before. $59,317,000 designated general funds, $53,590,000 other funds, and a $22,890,400 federal fund. The designated general funds is an increase of $576,000, 1% increase. A $2,322,000 increase from the FY24 adjusted base, of representing a 4.5% increase in other funds, and a $50,000 increase in federal funds. The full positions for the department is 544 full-time positions and 14 temporary positions. This represents a 24-position increase over the FY24 adjusted base. To give a little bit more background on that large unrestricted general fund, there's a $2.2 million fund switch for the corporation business and professional licensing. This was aimed largely to stabilize professional licensing fees in regards to investigation costs. Those investigation costs can spike unpredictably depending on what the investigation is, and this resulted in increases in professional licensing costs, which funded those investigations. By switching to their three-year average of $2.2 million, they hope to stabilize those licensing costs. The $3 million increase or fund switch for the Alaska Development Corporation, Alaska Gasoline Development Corporation, is due to the fact that the Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas Pipeline Fund is due to exhaust this year. So they'll be switching to general funds, which aligns to the predicted future of the Alaska Development Corporation, which has severely reduced their budget in the past since FY21 by 70%, and has kept their operating costs flat. And then the $5 million one-time increment for the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute is to essentially help them establish new markets after a significant downturn in current markets, largely in China. The subcommittee set an amendment deadline and received no amendments, and so there were no amendment actions taken in this budget.
You have Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Representative Edgman, Mr. Ainsworth, my question is about the AGDC LNG money switching to general funds. And I don't recollect, but were there any communications about this being a one-year allocation general funds, or is it expected that in perpetuity it will be a $3,086,000 allocation annually to the AGDC?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Hannon, that was a one-year appropriation of the LNG fund, which at one point was capitalized with a lot of money, thinking back to Senate Bill 138, which was passed back in 2016, that created, I can't remember the exact amount, it was well over $100 million. But that that fund has now been depleted, and for operational purposes, the $3 million that are being switched from the LNG fund to UGF would basically allow the AGDC, Alaska Gasoline Development Corporation, to keep its doors open and to pay for a maintenance cost, or, you know, operational costs.
One follow-up? keeping its doors open this fiscal year, but that money would be through the chair, rolled into the base in perpetuity? Or are we, is there discussions around recapitalizing the fund? Or, because there was some initial narrative about we're on the brink of a privatization fund, but we didn't change any of the language to say this is a one-year funding, and so next year come back and ask us again if you still need it. And so I'm just curious whether there were any outside of subcommittee discussions about it that led to any of those conclusions that, you know, next year we should revisit this instead of rolling it into the base.
Through the chair, I think I misspoke. I didn't quite get the gist of your question, but I'd like to turn this over to my staff to answer it more thoroughly.
For the record, Leigh Ballinsworth, through the chair, this is being rolled into the base. A fund capitalization into the AKLNG fund would produce the same effect. It would require further capitalization for further years. But to my knowledge, the plan is to continue this plan for privatization, and so rolling it into the base and then continuing with that line is the current plan.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the chair. Representative Edgman, thank you for pointing out that this particular agency was one of the agencies that received the biggest percentage of reductions in those years where we were trying to reduce our overall expenditures for the operating budget. And I think we're all aware that there was an opportunity cost that came with that, with those reductions. My question, first of all, I have a couple, but positions, total positions, 558, do you know how that number has fluctuated from, let's say, 5 years ago, 7 years ago? Are we still down, or are we getting closer to where we were back when we started to make those cuts?
Through the chair, that's a very good question. I wish I could tell you I researched that. I didn't, but I just know from memory that the department has continued on its work, and there's been a lot of fund source shifts to designated general funds, mm-hmm. Other funds, federal funds.
Mm-hmm.
This department really, during the COVID era, really saw a lot of additional spending that flowed through money from the federal government. So my answer would be, without doing specific research, and I don't think we did at the subcommittee level, would be that number probably has remained fairly consistent throughout the 2015-2016 era, when the department really got a lot of cut to its UGF funds.
If I can add on, for the record, Leigh Ballinsworth. So for this particular year, the 24 new positions are largely added on to handle new responsibilities of the department, which include the broadband office and new ILJA money coming in. So grant administrators and executive assistants to help with those. And so there is some growth there with new responsibilities to the department.
And if I might, Madam Chair, just to expand on the broadband component, that's federal pass-through money. So the broadband office that, of course, is just getting up and running and positioning itself, hopefully, to do bigger and better things.
I can continue. Thank you, Madam Chair. I bring up the issue of positions mainly because I know probably many of the rest of you, but I certainly, over the last several years, received a significant increase of communications from my constituents, particularly in the having problems getting licensed and licensed quickly, particularly in the healthcare field. I will say, on behalf of the department, though, they've worked very well whenever I've brought the specific constituent concern to the attention of the department. They've always been, and particularly over the last year, been very, very good about getting after it as soon as they could and getting in contact with those constituents. But anyway, I think as we're trying to promote, a government that's responsive to the people's needs, a government that, helps to facilitate economic opportunity and jobs and those kinds of things, I would, I guess I'm just pointing out that we still need to make some work in the area of licensing. I hear about problems in relationship to nurses coming to our community in Ketchikan there and being all ready to go, but having to wait a couple of months before they can actually get up and running. And that's a problem. And again, it's not a criticism directly of DCCD. I think this is a result of their reductions that they've seen, and they've been very good at working with when they've been known about problems, when people are let them know about problems, they do get right on it. However, I guess that's not really a question. It's just more like some commentary. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Very good. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I may, for the record, Leigh Ballinsworth, through the Chair, Representative Ortiz, you'll be happy to hear that 12 of those 24 positions are in CBPL to help with professional licensing.
Good. Thank you.
Good. Representative Klum.
Thank you, Chair. Through the Chair, did the department talk at all about the $5 million to the Seafood Marketing Institute, like what they're going to be spending that $5 million on? Is it an ad campaign? Did they give you a sense of that?
Through the Chair, thank you for that question, Representative Cologne. Yes, we did bring the director of ASME, Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, to the table and queried him directly on the $5 million ad that came through the governor's office. It's the first, and I'll ask my staff to correct me here, but I think it's the first general fund increment that they've had, UGF increment that they've had since calendar year 2017 or FY18. But ASME doesn't sell seafood directly. It markets it, and the $5 million is going to be used to sort of work on a whole a number of fronts, including a seafood playing field that's changed considerably with a post-pandemic situation with Ukraine, Russia war, and with the China and a whole bunch of other marketing dynamics that have really sort of shifted the field for Alaska seafood. And there's been some questions and some concerns about $5 million given to a private public corporation, but from a historical perspective, ASME in the past has gotten a lot more. And this year, through the governor's budget submission, sort of in tandem with the tourism industry, there's $5 million increments for both seafood and tourism. And I guess I would close with Alaska seafood as being a real driver in Alaska's overall economy. In fact, it's the largest private sector employer. And it's very interesting to know that the seafood industry, and I'm maybe advocating here a little bit because my district is a commercial fishing district, but the seafood industry, of course, ties into the transportation industry, ties into a lot of different sectors of the economy, the shipping industry, the Anchorage International Airport, for example, derives a lot of its business, the seafood business, and so on and so forth. So, the subcommittee in the end agreed, and I do personally as well, with the governor's recommendation, we put $5 million in at a time when, the seafood industry really could use it in terms of holding on to that premium brand of Alaska seafood relative to a growing salmon, farm salmon industry, and a lot of other pressures on the industry across the globe.
Thank you. Can I have a follow-up?
Follow-up.
It sounds like it's needed. I guess I was trying to figure out if it's a marketing plan, do they share with you guys any specific goals to reach or increase in sales, or was it a general marketing plan? Just looking for and I can follow up with the department, but I didn't know in the subcommittee if they shared that with you guys or if they had specific goals in mind.
Yeah, Leigh, do you want to take the one, please?
For the record, Leigh Ballinsworth, through the Chair. They have a working plan right now. As the markets change and demands change, I'm sure their plan will change, but they are focused on finding new markets for Alaska seafood as their main market, or one of their main markets, had a significant downturn. So some of this money, at least, will be going towards looking for new markets in Europe and Africa, Latin America, and the Middle East. So,
thank you.
All right, seeing no additional questions, I did want to have a question on one more number increase. Is there any birthdays in the House that you're aware of? today.
What a coincidence, Madam Co-Chair. In fact, it is Labe's 30th birthday today, and wanted to wish him a happy birthday by bringing him in front of the committee today, and I think we succeeded. And if he stuttered a time or two, it's because he's getting up there in age. He's 30 years old. That's quite an achievement. So, but thank you, Madam Co-Chair and committee members. I think that concludes our presentation, unless there's anything further. We might have cake in the office later on.
Representative Hanning.
Madam Chair, would the representative be singing for his staff and providing him pie on his Pie Day birthday?
Or we don't have that written into the budget, sorry. Thank you. Thank you all.
All right. Thank you very much. I believe that concludes the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development Finance Subcommittee report. Next up, we will move to Department of Corrections, also with Representative Edgman. Go ahead and, when you're ready, begin your closeout report.
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm going to ask my staff, Joe Plesha, to come to the table and read the report here in just a second as well. But the Department of Corrections, in contrast to the Department of Commerce, it's a department that's funded largely from UGF. Some almost nearly 90% of the funding for the department is through UGF. The subcommittee did not entertain any amendments from subcommittee members, but we did working in the consultation, actually, or at the direction of the Department of Corrections, we're offering intent language to provide a little bit more definition to how community jails, the $10 million will be sort of allocated and spent amongst the 15 communities that participate in the program. And so with that, I'd like to turn things over to Joe to walk through the report.
For the record, Joe Plesha, aide to Representative Edgman. So the House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Corrections submits the following recommended operating budget for the FY24 to the House Finance Committee. We are advising $365,572,200 in unrestricted general funds, $14,355,500 in designated general funds, $22,343,600 in other funds, and $17,389,600 in federal funds, for a total of $419,660,900. So compared to the FY24 adjusted base, the subcommittee these recommend a decrease in $5,559,600, which is a 1.5% decrease in UGF, no change in designated general funds, an increase in $125,000, which is a 0.7% increase in federal funds, as well as an increase in $12,906,200, which is a 136.8% increase in other funds, for a total of $7,471,600, which is a 1.8% increase in all funds. And for positions, there are 2,109 permanent full-time positions. So for kind of our highlights, we reviewed the FY24 budget requests and adopted all items by unanimous consent, with the addition of the intent language that Representative Edgman just referenced. There were no increases or decreases to the FY24 governor's request. So some of these highlights are: we replaced $5,809,600 in GF with restorative justice account funding due to a significantly larger permanent fund dividend in 2022. The rest of the restorative justice account funding, $6,640,600, goes to address population management increases, including more employee overtime, moving and relocation costs, as well as the rising cost of supplies with inflation. So we also took out $7,500,000 of UGF out of physical health care because of ongoing cost reduction efforts, including the implementation of the Dialysis Center at Goose Creek Correctional Center, participation in the federal 340B drug pricing program,
and hepatitis C treatment cost reduction. That money has been shifted towards population management, mostly centered around institutional costs. As well as there's also intent language added at the department's request, and that centered around regional community jails allocation. And that was mostly just to help direct DOC on how to divide the funding between each community participating in the program. The governor's FY24 amended operating budget request also included $250,000 for a retired state trooper position that would be contracted out of DPS to act as an investigator slash liaison to the department's commissioner's office. The position would investigate the deaths in the previous year, as well as kind of act as an internal affairs for correctional officers, as well as investigate felony offenses. The committee received no amendments.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you very much. Through the chair, I do have a question with regard to the $7.5 million increment that was reduced from physical health care. And it sounds like you... my understanding is that the department felt that because the costs of treating some items such as hepatitis C and others had reduced so much that they would roll it into general operating costs. Is that okay? And so I wondered if there was discussion around mental health care being provided given specifically the data around what we know with the increased deaths, and that some of those deaths were suicides. And I just wondered if there was discussion around ensuring that there would be enough funding for mental health care.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, you know, we've got department officials in the audience. I know that's not the process to bring them forward at this point, but I can tell you that we did talk about mental health funding throughout the subcommittee process. Quite frankly, I think you could say that the department has never had enough money to appropriately tackle the mental health problem, given that as a department, you know, the number is staggering in terms of how many inmates, people who are incarcerated, actually have some degree of mental health affliction. You know, years past, it was up to 80%. I think the number that was quoted during subcommittee was more in the 60-some-odd percent. And the department does the best it can, but it's the Department of Corrections and not the Department of Mental Health Services, if you will. And I don't mean to be glib or facetious or anything like that, but we did talk about that. And in a perfect world, if we had an unlimited amount of money, we probably would have put a lot more in for it.
Follow up. Thank you. I really appreciate that there was that discussion, and I understand the complexity of the issue and the costs. I do hope that there was discussion around physical health care being inclusive as a holistic way of looking at physical health care. I know that there were so many intakes. I think I heard on the order of 10,000 plus intakes. So there's a lot of time spent with individuals as they come in to the DOC, and that amount of time it was something I had asked about earlier because I think that may be the time where we can offer up a little bit more of appreciation around mental health and physical health, that intake time. And so I understand that the $7.5 million was it's probably needed in operational costs as well. But I think I hope that we continue to stretch ourselves to think beyond physical health or to be inclusive of mental health when we define physical health as well. Thank you.
And if I may, Madam Co-Chair, to respond or to offer, you know, at least a partial response anyway, I think kudos has to go out to the department because they've been very innovative, you know, through the use of pharmaceutical products or whether doing dialysis in-house you know, working to keep those costs a major cost driver in the, you know, the overall department's budget. But again, it's a department that that you know, accepts sort of its, you know, its clients, I guess, if you will, put it sort of crudely. And you know, there could be one-time incidents where you get somebody who's got an inordinate amount of treatment needs, and that number can spike. So you know, they do the best they can, and I think they've made some really good headway. And hopefully, fingers crossed, there won't be a huge supplemental next year because something like that occurred.
Thank you, Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, either for Representative Edgman or Mr. Pleasure, the restorative justice account. The larger PFD resulted in more PFD money preliminarily in the hands of incarcerated persons. And those funds are, I mean, I'm just, I know that they're garnished or taken for child support, restitution, and the like. But can you give me just a little primer on what the restorative justice account is? Is it a remnant of SB 91, and is it being used properly to supplant general funds?
Through the chair, that's a great question, because I think that's been a lingering question for a number of years. The restorative justice account was created in 2019, and when you look at the language in Title 43, it's very prescriptive. In fact, it lays out five different sort of components as to where that money should actually be applied to. The first one is to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. The next category, and that's like 10 to 14% of the overall amount. The second category is Office of Victims' Rights, and then there's two different categories, smaller percentages that go to grantees for mental health and sexual assault and domestic violence. But the last category and the overriding category amongst all five of them is to the Department of Corrections. 79 to 88% of the overall amount that goes in the Restorative Justice Account Fund is given to the Department of Corrections for incarceration and for probation uses, not for health care, not for anything else that might be out there. The Restorative Justice Account itself resides in the Department of Revenue. It's a separate account within the Permanent Fund Dividend Account. And it fluctuates every year, of course, with the size of the PFD and the amount of ineligible recipients and so forth. And interestingly enough, I didn't really sort of grasp this until the subcommittee process this year. You know, the PFD that we got in calendar year 2022 was the largest in Alaska's, you know, in the history of permanent funds dividends, $3,200.84. But that moves. That amount gets circulated into the FY24 budgeting process that we're entertaining. And I think you saw with the Department of Health that Representative Stapp just presented a little bit ago, there's actually an allocation from the Restorative Justice Fund into the Department of Health itself. So it's a fund that it's been out there for a number of years. There's been a lot of competition for the use of the money. And with legislation passed about 4 years ago, there's, you know, been some sideboards put into place that, you know, possibly in the future will be need to be revisited just as much as a few years ago.
All right. Very good. Looks like that's the end of our questions. We appreciate the presentation from the Department of Corrections. Do you have any final comments you would like to make, Representative Edgman?
No, I'd like to thank my staff. Thank the department, our ledge finance analyst that we work with, and appreciate the time before the committee.
All right. Thank you. We'll take a brief at ease to reset for the next closeout. House Finance back on the record. Our next closeout report scheduled for this morning is the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs and Legislature. That would be presented by Representative Foster, Co-Chair Foster. Please welcome to the table, and go ahead and put yourself on the record and begin your closeout.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I am Representative Neil Foster, House District 39, and with me I have
Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Neil Foster.
And I'll go ahead and jump right into it. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs submits the following recommended operating budget for FY24 to the House Finance Committee. And in terms of fund sources, unrestricted general funds of $16,858,800, designated general funds of $28,500, other funds of $12,700, and federal funds of $33,412,600, for total funds of $62,300,000. So the unrestricted general fund difference from FY24 adjusted base to the House subcommittee budget recommendation is an increase of $753,100 of unrestricted general funds, which is a 4.7% above the FY24 adjusted base. And so in terms of positions, permanent full-time, we've got 270. Permanent part-time is zero, temporary is zero, and so total positions 270. That represents an increase of six additional permanent full-time positions, mostly associated with the State Defense Force. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs reviewed the FY24 Governor's Budget Request, including amendments, and recommends the following actions: accept all the governor's proposals for the Alaska Military Youth Academy with one technical subcommittee change to correctly classify $475,000 in UGF funding used to match federal funding as UGF match. And this includes the following items: increase $1.9 million in federal authority and decrease UGF funding by $1.9 million in UGF savings, and then $475,000 in UGF match funds. And on the second page, $881,900 in UGF to upgrade and modernize the Military Youth Academy campus as a one-time increment. That results in a net UGF savings of $543,100. And then finally, approve all other transactions other than the Alaska State Defense Force. Reduce the governor's $2.5 million request to $1.25 million for the Alaska State Defense Force. Approve the transfer of the Alaska State Defense Force out of the Commissioner's Office with all related funds into a separate allocation. Approve four out of the five positions requested, including the director position, and provide $414,800 for expanded operations, and there were no amendments. And then attached here we have the House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Reports are the agency totals, transaction compare, FY24 adjusted base plus, and the House Subcommittee. And transaction compare, FY24 Governor Amend, and House Subcommittee, and the wordage. So with that, that is the report for the DMVA.
Any questions? All right, that may be the first.
Oh, we like that.
All right. Thank you. Any other comments you want to say on Department of Military and Veterans Affairs closeout? If not,
I don't have anything.
Okay. If not, we'll move on to the governor's closeout report.
So with regard to the governor's subcommittee budget, the House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Office of the Governor submits the following recommended operating budget for FY24 to the House Finance Committee. And in terms of fund sources, we've got UGF funds of $27,213,900, designated general funds of zero, other funds of $533,300, federal funds of $234,500, and total funds of $27,981,700. The unrestricted general fund difference from FY24 adjusted base to the House subcommittee budget recommendation is an increase of $8,086,600 of unrestricted general funds, and that's a 42.3% increase above the FY24 adjusted base. In terms of positions, we've got permanent full-time of 145 positions, permanent part-time, zero, and temporary positions of 24 for a total of 169 positions. This represents an increase of seven positions, five permanent full-time plus two temporary positions. That's a combination of positions in the infrastructure office, the election clerks, and security. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Office of the Governor reviewed the FY24 Governor's budget request, including amendments, and recommends the following actions. Accept all the Governor's proposed budget, and this includes the following highlighted items. We've got $1 million in general funds to maintain the Federal Infrastructure and Jobs Act Implementation Office with two positions. $5,680,700 to reverse and restore UGF to the numbers section from the language section, and then $113,000 for recruitment and retention of election clerks. We've got $504,300 maintaining the two-year language appropriation for ongoing costs of election worker pay, increases currently supported with FY23 operating funds, and a FY22-23 $293,000 to increase the governor's security detail by two positions, and we had no amendments. And the House Finance Subcommittee for the Office of the Governor adopts the attached reports, agency totals, transaction compare, FY24 adjusted base, and House Subcommittee, and also wordage. So with that, if there are any questions, happy to take them.
We do have a question. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the chair. You know, I've been around a while, and I should be able to figure this out, but remind me, what's the impact when we make a move from, quote, the number section or from the language section to the number section? What are the reasons why we do that, and what's the overall impact of doing something like that?
Madam Chair, this was a request of the governor, and then just for, and I'll put it in pure layman's terms, but I might turn it over to my staff, but just for folks in the public, watching the public, you've got the numbers section, which is just purely, you know, just you might have a section for just education, hypothetically, and you might put a number in there, and that's as simple as that. But in the language section, that's the back part of our budget, and that's where things are stipulated in more of a narrative form. And so in terms of the purpose as to why this was done, if I could turn it over to my staff, Madam Chair.
Thank you once again. For the record, Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Neil Foster. Through the chair, Representative, last year at the end of conference, committee, the decision was made to pull out the roughly $5.6 million from the numbers section, which is the agency operations component of the governor's budget, remove it out of there and put it into a language section, and thus removing it from the numbers section, which essentially makes it disappear from like subcommittee purview. So once we fast forward to this year's budget, the desire from the governor's office was to put that back into the numbers section, which then gives the appearance of a 42.3% increase in numbers. Excuse me. Overall, though, this number, the governor's budget, if you take in both, take in both the account of Section 1, which is the numbers section, and the language section, the governor's budget has not increased because of that 5.6. It's just a movement and now being reflected in a different section of the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Representative Josephson.
Yes. Thank you, through the chair, Mr. Brody. What was our, let's just transparently, if you can, what was our legislative motivation for moving that to the number, to the language section? What were we, upset? Were we pleased? What were we feeling when we decided to do that?
Feeling good.
Through the chair, I will, with the permission of the committee, I will be as delicate as possible. When the governor's budget left this body and went over to the Senate, that $5.6 million was reflected in the numbers section. The other body chose to treat that money a little differently and removed it from the numbers section, placing it into the language section. And then that is what went before the governor after the end of conference committee. So that was a decision made to pull it from the numbers into the language was a decision made by the Senate. And so coming back, the governor wrote his budget, putting it back into the numbers section.
I think I'll take this off record. Thank you.
All right. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, through the chair, co-chair. I had a question about the number of temporary and full-time. Well, actually, it's a very simple question. I see that we're adding two more positions for the governor's security detail. Wondered if you could just give me a little bit more, shine a little more light on that. Are we expecting that to be in perpetuity then for the governor, any governor who comes in, or is it a temporary position? And if any more background you have on that, that'd be great.
Thank you, to Representative Galvin. I believe those were, correct me if I'm wrong, those are permanent full-time positions, Mr. Anderson. And also, from my understanding, they just had security gaps and probably don't want to get into exactly what those might be and reveal any holes in the security detail. But my understanding is that they just had some gaps in security and they wanted to fill those.
Thank you.
All right, very good. Seeing no additional questions, it looks like the governor's budget is closeout has been finished. And the next item, the next closeout, would be the legislature. Representative Foster, if you would like to continue with that closeout report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Legislature submits the following recommended operating budget for the FY24 to the House Finance Committee. And in terms of fund sources, we have unrestricted general funds of $73,716,000, designated general funds of $402,300, other funds of $1,046,100, and federal funds of zero. So the total budget is $75,164,400. The unrestricted general fund difference from FY24 adjusted base to the House subcommittee budget recommendation, that's an increase of $300,300 of unrestricted general funds, and that's a 0.4% increase above the FY24 adjusted base. In terms of positions, we've got permanent full-time, 270. We've got permanent part-time, 281. And then we have temporary positions 28. That represents an additional two permanent full-time positions. So total positions 579. Budget action, the House Finance Subcommittee for the Legislature reviewed the FY24 legislative budget and audit budget, as well as the Legislative Council's budget, and recommends the following actions. Accept the legislature's proposed budget, and that includes the following highlighted items. $661,300 for replacement of general funds with restorative justice funds resulting from increased funds available. $200,000 for two new positions, one in the MATSU Legislative Information Office, and also one in supply. $100,000 increase for security services at the Anchorage Legislative Information Office. $107,000, a salary increase for attorneys in the Office of Victims' Rights, and that is contingent on SB 81 legislation, that piece being passed. The subcommittee removed a legislative council increment for special session expenses and recommends $1 million of lapsing funds be authorized in the language section as a multi-year appropriation, so that would be for FY24 as well as FY25. The committee had no amendments to take out. So finally, reports that are attached here, the House Finance Budget Subcommittee for Legislature adopts the agency totals, transaction compare FY24 adjusted base, and House Subcommittee, as well as transaction compare FY24 Governor Amend and House Subcommittee. So with that, that is the report for the legislature, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Representative Foster, Representative Edgman did a very good job of describing the buckets that are sources, not sources, recipients of restorative justice monies. And he mentioned the Violent Crimes Compensation Board, Office of Victims' Rights, grantees for, I think, DV and SA, domestic violence, sexual assault, and the department itself, and also noted the Department of Health. My question for you is, if I met a very wonky constituent who was way in the weeds, and the constituent said, did you, instead of using general funds to fund your agency, the legislature, did you use more than $500,000 of restorative justice funds? And if you did, why did you do that? What do I say to that constituent? How do I explain that?
If I may, if I could turn that over to my staff, and it looks like there might be another comment.
Through the chair, Representative, the Office of Victims' Rights actually lives within the legislature, not really having a home anywhere else. So it exists under the structure of the legislature, so it lives in the legislature. So that's where the office is. So that money of restorative justice, it's only paying for items that the Office of Victims' Rights uses.
Follow.
So could I tell the constituent there's a firewall and none of that money will go to my salary or our electric bill in the Capitol? I'm serious. Can I tell them this is going to this victim's rights office?
Through the chair, that is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Seeing no other potential questions from other constituents. concludes Representative Foster your closeout reports. Are there any final comments?
I was just.
Oh, maybe. I'm sorry. No, that's correct. Sorry. Yeah, go ahead. If you have any closing comments.
Actually, maybe I do not, but thank you very much. I thought I might add a little more to the numbers section versus language section, it's what our body and what the other body does sometimes. You don't know motivations and so forth, but the language section, just for folks who might be watching, is typically the purview of our full finance committee, and there's just a lot of, I guess, to use the term that I heard earlier, wonkiness sometimes of what we do. But anyway, I don't know if there's anything to add to that. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. I guess we'll take a brief at ease, get reseated. House Finance back on the record. So our final closeout report will be the Department of Revenue, which I had the privilege of chairing. To present this report, I would like to invite my staff, Mr. Matt Gruning, to the table. Mr. Gruning, please come forward. place yourself on the record and begin the closeout report for the Department of Revenue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Matt Greening, Staff 2, Representative Johnson, and Subcommittee 8 for the Department of Revenue. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Revenue held a total of three meetings, made no changes from the governor's request, and submits the following recommended operating budget to the House Finance Committee. Fund sources as follows. $27,688,000 in unrestricted general funds, $3,596,000 in designated general funds, $329,185,000 in other funds, and $88,235,000 in federal funds, for a total budget of $488,706,000 from all fund sources. Compared to the FY24 adjusted base, the subcommittee's recommendation represents an increase of $31,000 in UGF, $342,000 in DGF, and again, that's designated general funds, which are program receipts, $5,149,000 in federal funds, as well as a decrease of $222,000 in other funds, for a total budget increase of $5.3 million, or 1.2% increase of all funds. The department has 827 full-time positions, 24 permanent part-time, 18 temps, for a total of 869 positions. And just for frame of reference, that's an increase of one position from the FY23 management plan, and that was the administrative services director moving over from OMB to the Department of Revenue. And they historically, back in FY15, had 883 positions, so that's quite a bit down from where we were in FY15. Moving on, after reviewing each of the governor's proposed transactions in detail, the committee adopted all items by unanimous consent. There are several highlights of those items listed on page 2 of the narrative report, and I'd be happy to run through those. Each item and in more detail can be found on the transaction compare sheets and the BA sheets there in members' packets. And if you'd like me to run through those items, Madam Chair, I can.
Yes.
Okay. The first one is the tax revenue management system. This is for $373,000 in UGF. And this is for Fast Enterprises, who constructed the system to do a cloud server hosting. This would increase security, ensure IRS compliance, and the contract would include 24-hour monitoring, security updates, maintenance, tuning, database backups, liability insurance, and would cover the cost of operating the system and database licensing. There's also a $168,000 request in the supplemental for this item. Moving on, we replaced $342,600 of UGF with the same amount in higher education investment funds, and this is related to investment for the Higher Education Investment Fund, which the Department of Revenue does. In FY22, the division began charging 10 basis points for all fees under management. This resulted in a little over $300,000 in fees budgeted to the HIFE, and again, that's the Higher Education Investment Fund. As a result of the reverse sweep, this funding had previously come out of UGF. With the passage of House Bill 322 from last year, it made the HIFE non-sweepable and resulted in this opportunity to fund the HIFE with UGF. There is the PFD application information system maintenance and support. This is related to a capital project which began in FY14. It's nearing completion, and this would be for operational funding and contractual services. And this system is really meant for increased security and modernization storage for the information that the PFD division has. There's a 5% COLA, cost of living adjustment, for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation employees. Although AHFC does not require statutory authority to implement this, they typically follow pay increases for exempt state employees. We passed House Bill 226 last year, so this is just bringing up a 5% cost of living adjustment that wasn't in the bill in line with other state employees. And finally, we fully funded the incentive compensation for direct investment staff at the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. There was already $1.6 million in the base for this. This brings the total up to $2.8 million, and for the direct investment staff, brings the incentive agent up to full funding. The chair set an amendment deadline. Welcome amendments from all members, and the committee received no amendments. The attached reports include the Department of Revenue agency totals, transaction compare adjusted base plus to House subcommittee, and DOR wordage. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, looking around the table and seeing no questions, that is our final closeout report. I would like to let everyone know how much I appreciate and recognize how much work that's gone into this last couple days we've had the closeout reports. It's a small window on what was a large and long exhaustive process. The Department of Revenue was the last closeout report to present, and that wraps up as it wraps up all of our closeout reports. And at this point, the Legislative Finance and our legal team will draft the Finance Committee substitute for HB 39. That will be CS1, and we'll have that document for House Finance Committee on Monday, March 20th. During that week, we will be hearing public testimony and taking amendments, and I'm anticipating setting an amendment deadline of March 24th. I would like to thank all of the Finance Subcommittee members and their staff for doing a fantastic job in assisting our members and the whole of the House Finance team. Our next meeting is scheduled for today, 1:30 p.m. At that meeting, we will receive a presentation from the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority budget on the Mental Health Trust Authority budget. Presenting will be Steve Williams, the Executive Director for the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. And with that, at 10:43, we are adjourned.